listening to the Central Station Podcast, where we bring you true stories of what life in the outback is really like and why many wouldn't live anywhere else. So pull up a stump, pop the billy on, or crack a cold one as we talk to the men and women who call some of the most remote parts of Australia home.
This episode is from the Central Station back catalogue. It is, as they say, an oldie but a goodie, and we thought it deserved another run on the podcast. Enjoy. The first year out of school is equally exciting and terrifying. You're considered an adult by society, and with that comes both freedoms and responsibilities. With her high school experience not being the best, and her first job on a cattle station getting off to a rocky start, Pip Bain felt like she had finally found her feet, only to learn that her mother had passed away by suicide. The profound loss of her mother was only amplified by the shock as Pip learnt she had been sheltered from her mother's mental health struggles. In this episode, Pip shares her story of how the next decade of her life would be shaped by losing her mother and how it led her to take the long way around to find her place in this world.
Yes, I came home. As anyone who's lost a loved one would understand, I had to go through all the funeral arrangements. And I guess, I've only just learned this recently, I definitely did not grieve. I'm not going to say properly or enough or anything like that, but I definitely didn't process the whole situation very well. I was definitely a very lost little soul, and this little lost soul sort of got swept up into a V8 Land Cruiser. And by April the next year, I found myself in the Territory on Alexandria, which is NAPCO company. It's all a bit of a blur really, because I when I say I got swept up into a V8 Land Cruiser, that's not a joke. I don't ever really remember making the plans or saying yes or no to anything. I just sort of, next thing I knew, I was on my way to the Territory. And I think it was just that I didn't really want to be around home, and I was just looking for anything to escape the situation that I was in. So
when you say V8 Land Cruiser, that's code for a boy?
Yeah. Yep. So, I got chased around Geraldton by pretty good looking pilot, and he had been given the job as fixed wing pilot at Alexandria, and we are still very good friends to today. So Scott, if you're listening all the way from Canada, yeah, but it's, yeah, so that was, looking back, I couldn't have ended up in a better place. Like, Alexandria was exactly what I needed for the headspace that I was in at the time. I will admit, I did have a pretty big accident on my first day at work. So I was working under, Ross and Robin Peatling were managing the property at the time, and I was working in the Wiener camp, and first day on the job, I got hit in the face by a gate. So kids, if you're listening, put your foot on the gate and do not throw gates.
Remembering that this is coming from a young woman who had grown up on a cattle station, yep, then a farm, like she, yep, was not new to the industry, nope, and you still lost, how many teeth did you lose?
Four teeth
on your, yep, and on your first day.
First
on the
day,
top.
Yep. So I don't care what the stockman says to you, just follow him in string. just hear my voice in the back of your head. If anyone ever says, oh, no, just throw that gate, it'll be right.
And so this is when you were chaining a gate, were you?
No, so it was one of those, it was a homemade self-latching gate. I've heard that it got removed not long after I left. But yeah, and but it was one of those things where common sense should have overridden, and I just didn't have enough common sense back then. So NAPCO were great. They flew me back to WA, and I got to come home for 2 weeks and to have my teeth sort of not – well, they definitely weren't in my head anymore, but have some falsies put in for a bit. And I flew back to Alex, and when I got back there, everyone was like, oh, we never thought you'd come back.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame job, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
First day on the job.
And I'd jammed my finger in a gate as well, so I was missing a fingernail and my front teeth. It's great.
Winner, winner.
What an image. Dinner.
What can I ask you, like, what is your headspace at that time? I'm just thinking back to the end of our last episode, you'd also mentioned, I believe, that you weren't aware of your mum's mental health issues when you learnt that she'd passed by suicide. That was a
massive
you've got
shock.
Yeah, so you've got losing a parent, then losing a parent that way.
Mm.
Then, like you said, you kind of you didn't want to be around home, and but also
I didn't know where I wanted to be. I think,
but I'm very lost. 18-year-old in a way does, but then you've got to add these elements onto it. You know, you're just out of school. You've got that freedom. You're an adult. You can drink. You can drive. You can buy things. You can earn money. You know, there's a cute boy that says, let's go have an adventure up north. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Then I'm just thinking, even if none of these other things had happened, it would still be pretty hard to come back to the job after having such a memorable first day.
You know, it didn't faze me.
Really? I would have.
Like, I think I will admit, like, I was going back, you know, I was going back for love, like, well, what I thought was love. And, yeah, so I was actually really excited to go home. Go back to Alexandria, I mean. God, here I go. I loved it so much I was calling it home. So, yeah, no, I was really keen, and I will admit, like, things didn't go great when I got back. But I, like I said before, it was such an incredibly supportive family in the end that I would – looking back, I would never have thought twice either way. I don't think. I just
don't hold out on the details, Pip. What happened on the way back to Alex? This is a safe space you can share.
Scott.
Yeah, Scott. No, you know what? If Scott didn't want this story told, well,
he's happily married now, so I don't feel so bad.
Exactly.
But
he's had his happy ending. He's fine.
Yeah. Unfortunately, things were going downhill, I think, with us. I was so young. I was very messed up in the head. And, yeah, so I had flown all the way back across Australia and then, you know, back across the other side of Queensland. And, yeah, Scott and I split up that night, the night before I got back out to Alex.
I find it very interesting the way you've told this story on air versus off air. Well, just that you're taking – you seem to be shouldering a lot of the responsibility and blame here, and you're – whereas, you know, I mean, and there's always two sides to a story, or more than two sides, and each person's side and then the truth or whatever, you know, whatever they say. But, yeah, you just – I find it interesting then that you're like, oh, I was really messed up in the head. Or, like, you seem to be like, you know, not making excuses but kind of taking all the responsibility for this.
Yeah.
But for whatever was going on, the gist of it was that you went there with him and then when you're on the bus on the way back, he – broke up with you?
I was just about to get on the bus.
Just about to get on the bus, and he was like, So but I think it's important to that part of the story is told regardless of what was happening in the relationship, because what I find so impressive is that you're about to go back to this job and your partner, he breaks up with you, and you still went back and you stayed there and you worked there and you made it work, which is, again, so – some people may have struggled to come back because of, you know, being embarrassed or whatever for the accident or ashamed.
People lost a lot of money from me coming home. Apparently there were bets on and a lot of people lost.
but then you've got this extra. I just think it's incredible that, yeah, like then you got to add some heartbreak on top of this because,
I remember
people would be like, oh hell, like nut and just turn and, you know.
And it's funny because I do remember that little snippet quite vividly, and not once did it cross my mind to turn around and go home.
And
it was something
along the lines. We are such different people.
Well, it was something along the lines of, like, you can just imagine, like, so I drove to the territory. So you can just imagine the size of my suitcase. And then you can imagine the size of the bag that I was allowed to take on the plane in the back of like a little Cessna 150 to get into Mount Isa when I had my accident. So all my stuff was still at Alex. And I guess that was half of it was I was like, well, I kind of have to go back there at some stage to get my stuff. And all this stuff was going on. And like I said before, it's not like I didn't want to be home. I knew that I needed to do something. And I just happened to land, I landed on my feet when it came to Alex.
Tell me more about your time at Alex then. And so when you, you had your second start. First day.
Round two, ding. Yeah, so straight into stock camp then, and I was working for Ross and Robin's son, Richard. Hi, Richard. I'm pretty sure he listens.
Oh, really? That's exciting. Yeah. Richard would love to have your dad on the podcast. He's a bit of a legend, so.
He is a bloody legend, and to this day is still one of my favourite bosses. There was a wing of us girls working for him. Nikki's still a really good friend today. Like, literally, I've made friends there that have lasted for life. And I guess it was really important to have that Richard as that role model, because if he said jump, we said how high, and he would jump just as high with us. Like, he was there with us every step of the way. He was pretty patient and very willing to teach us stuff. So if we looked like we didn't know what we were doing, instead of just yelling at us and, you know, making us look like a fool, he would show us definitely myself. And he'd get a lot of work out of us that way. And then he wouldn't really get cranky until, you know, someone would get arrogant with him or back chat him, or which is completely understandable. And of course, then, we just all got along really, really well. And I always felt like being camped out. And I think there was like three of us girls, three or four boys, and Richard and the cook. And we were just a massive family. We're all really close. There was definitely like the ups and downs. There was definitely fights. There was definitely, you know, you'd never see the camp during daylight because you'd be gone, you know, before sunrise in the morning, and you wouldn't come back till after dark. Like, I've never worked so hard in my life, and it was a massive wake-up call. But it was different to Yanri in the way that we were all on the same level. There was no hierarchy. We were all just Jillaroos and Jackaroos. Richard was the boss, and there was no questions about it. And that I needed that. I didn't need to be fighting for my role in the camp. I just needed to be able to work and do my job, and at the end of the day, feel good about myself, which I did.
So I don't know how to ask this. Like, I'm not trying to continuously bring your mum up, but I suppose what we discussed beforehand is that this episode is really about, I suppose, the main part of it is dissecting and discussing your journey and what you've done in the last 10 years and how a lot of that has been shaped by what happened. So, but it, in a way, it feels a bit weird for me to be like, you know, you just share a happy memory. And then I'm like, now back to your mum.
Remember that shit thing that happened to
your
life?
Yeah. So,
no, it's fine, honestly. And I think, and like I said at the very beginning, losing mum shaped me and made me who I am today.
Yeah.
So, and I often wonder who I would be with her still here. Probably a lot more mentally stable, but. But in saying that, without losing her, I don't think I would have had the opportunity to do the growth that I've had to do. And it makes you a lot more resilient having to go through something like that. And I'm not saying that, you know, someone has to go through something like losing a parent at the age of 18 to become resilient, but it definitely quickened the process up for me. And for everyone, that life lesson will be completely different. But it's not until you have that life lesson that you're like, this is reality. This is, you know, life isn't all butterflies and daisies. There's a lot of blood, sweat, tears, a lot of tears. And I think that's – now I'm going to jump back to Alex. I think that's what Alex taught me, was that life isn't all peaches, and there are days that are going to be really, really not great. But there are I learned so much, and I thrive off learning. I'm not – you and I have been talking about my memory retention. So I'm not a fast learner, but I always feel like once I have learned something, I feel really good about myself. So I think that's where Alex really gave me the little boost I needed, and I might not have learned that as quickly if it hadn't been for losing Mum, because I wouldn't have been that low down the like – I wouldn't have needed picking up as much as what I did.
I suppose the other thing for context for our listeners is that we're pretty good friends. We've spoken. Pip's just looking at me like, are we?
Do you want me to read out the abusive messages you were sending me?
I was not. Pip was supposed to be back at her house recording this a few hours ago, and what was supposed to be just loading some cattle on a truck this morning and I'll be back by 9, saw her walk in the door at like 1 o'clock and
hashtag farm life.
Yeah. And I was like, hashtag, I just drove 400 kilometers to record this episode with you.
Because you love me, Steph.
Yeah, I do. And because we're good friends. And we've spoken about your mum and your life a lot off air. So if some of these discussions seem blunt or abrasive or, you know, very forward by me, I suppose, just to give people the context that
I'm not backwards with coming forwards about it either.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So, but I suppose I'm wondering, like, when you went up to Alex, do you tell people, hey, my mum just died and she died in this way, or do you keep that to yourself, or do you think people are going to treat you different because of that?
Yeah. So, okay, really interesting that you brought this up. When I was having my interview with Ross, it was just subconscious. I just didn't bring it up at all. Dad was my emergency contact, and there were just no questions asked. And I never told anyone. Obviously, partner at the time knew, but, yeah, like literally no one knew. And the only reason someone found out was because I had a photo of Mum pinned on my wall. And one of the, you know, we were all having a bit of a drinking session in my room one night. Oh, God, we were have so much fun back then. And someone said, oh, who's that? And I was like, oh, that's – I think I must have said that was my mum, or I must have said it in a past tense, and they all went, oh, like what happened? And I will never forget the shock of their faces when they realized that I'd only just lost my mum not even 6 months ago. And me being like, well, what of it? Like, you know, I think I'd already and this is where the pastoral growing up on a station and stuff, I guess, kind of prepared me for this, because I was like, it's life. With life comes death. And so and as much as, you know, I longed for my mum, the thought of her not being here anymore at that time, it was just like, oh, she's gone. Like, I can't bring her back.
Do you not think, though, that that was – I love how I'm turning this into a counseling session. I'm just going to psychoanalyze you. Do you not think
Lord
that was –
Lord knows I need it.
Do you not think that was perhaps also maybe just like a massive case of denial and just, oh, God, and yeah, just not acknowledging,
yeah,
you know, just –
yeah,
putting walls up and just not processing.
It's not like I didn't want to talk about it with people, but I didn't actually, you know what, the biggest thing, and it's not something I realized until after it happened, was I didn't want people to feel sorry for me. I did not want people to treat me differently because I'd lost my mum, and I did not want people to be like, you know, if I got upset or angry or something like that, people treat me differently because of that. And it was a subconscious thing. It's not something I walked into Alexandria and be like, right, I'm going to be this tough nut who doesn't talk about her mum. It was just, I don't know, just it's who I was at the time, I think, more than anything.
So how did the rest of the season go at Alex after that?
Oh, yes, now you get into the romance of the horses and the cows.
Yeah.
This is the fun part. So, stock camp life was just – loved it. We got given our own colts. So we all got to, the colts were broken in, and then we got to like ride them, give them all their, you know, put them on cattle and break. We weren't breaking them in. We were just wet saddle cloths, lots of wet saddle cloths, which I loved. I'd never ridden many young horses before. And I loved being on a horse. behind, you know, 3,000 head of cattle. We would do, you know, walks that were so long, and the Barkly tableland is so flat that I'll never forget leaving a mill one day and seeing this tiny little speck on the horizon and Richard being like, oh yeah, that's where we're going tonight. And all day, like, all you could see was this tiny speck. And I can't remember how far we walked that day, but the days were long and hard and dusty, and I reckon I loved every single minute of it. So yeah, we had that. And like, yard work was always really good. The cattle there were relatively quiet. Like, I think I only got snotted a couple of times by cows. Man, I was a rodeo, probably to this day still the best weekend of my life.
Hello, you're sitting here with me today. Like,
okay, right. Wash your mouth out. You know, it's up there. Oh gosh, what else? There was also, yeah.
So in a way, you still would have a very typical first year on a station, you know, young, 18, away from home, making new friends, being in love, having fun.
Yeah.
Or maybe not in love, because obviously, like you said, you guys broke up.
Well,
but,
you know,
it's all the other things that come with being young and out of home, not for the first time, because you'd been up at Yannery the year before, but in a new place, meeting new people, having and new experiences.
I was very lucky to meet another Jackaroo who was just as gorgeous. Once again, still really, really good friends with him. And I think that also helped the experience, because we got along really well. We worked really well together. Yeah. And that was actually, it was funny. That relationship with this other Jackaroo taught me respect, like how much respect you need in love. And not that we were in love, but just in life in general. Like, if you're going to have a good relationship with someone, having that respect of their work and their ethics and their abilities and stuff for me has become really, really important. And I think that's based a lot on those early relationships. Probably why I'm still single today.
Yeah, because we've got such high standards, just saying.
The standards got set we're a bit, really high really quick.
It's not because we're a bit weird and have expired or anything, but, you know, we've just got high standards.
Screaming at 30, but anyway.
Hey, at least you're not there yet. So after Alex, so you finish out the season there, did you have any more of an idea of, you know, we kind of spoken about that when you came out of school as well, you weren't really sure what you wanted to do. It's kind of a natural progression to head up to Yannery, and, well, you know, you'd always been around station people, you knew the family, you knew the community. So it was kind of a, you know, and then obviously, mum and, you know, in love and big adventures, being young, going up to the territory to, where did you think you were headed after that?
I had no idea. Absolutely no idea. I remember when I left, so I had to come home, a little bit early. So I didn't actually get to finish the season at Alex. So I sort of came late and left early. And that was a very teary day leaving Alex, but we got there in the end. So I came home. I had to come home for Landor races because it was Mum's memorial race, and it was a bit of a family, the ladies bracelet. I don't know if it was lady bracelet or the Mount Clare handicap were, you know, run in memory of Mum. And so I came home and I was like, right, well, there's no point going back to the territory because they only had like a month left to work anyway. And I will admit, by then, I was starting to question my passion for the beef industry, and I felt like I wanted to try something else. And I'd always loved kids. I always thought I was really good with kids. And so I was like, oh, I want to be a governess, because I didn't want to leave the station life, but I wanted to try something different. So I'd already been the cook, and as much as I did love that, I really wanted to touch on my bases. So I went home. I ended up going on a bit of a road trip with a couple of friends. Once again, this time got thrown in the door, I think, of a patrol, of my cousin's patrol. And we did a really cool road trip through all, like, country South Australia and New South Wales. I ended up working at a pub in West Wyalong. It was a bit of a whirlwind. Ended back up in Queensland with the Jackaroo boyfriend.
From NAPCO?
Yes, from Natco. Oh,
that's
yes.
exciting. Was he on this road trip as well?
No, he wasn't. I drove up to – I bought a ute in Gundagai and, yeah, drove up to – yeah, where he was in Queensland. And
we're going to have to Facebook stalk him later. I don't know who it was.
He's a sweetie. He's got three kids and a missus now, so settle down, Steph.
No, I just want – not for me, Goose. I mean, I just want to know who this boy was that you drove across the country for. Anyway.
I think I've sacrificed a lot for men in my life now that I think about it.
That's all right. We'll get to that. Don't worry. That part of the therapy session is still coming.
So, yeah, spent Christmas in Queensland – and got a job on a cattle station just north of Julia Creek. I was governessing for two kids, which actually turned into probably as I was much of an au pair as I was a governess. So I was pretty much like staying home, everything to these kids. I would get them out of bed in the morning, and not every morning, but most mornings would, you know, get them ready for school, teach them, so do school with them, you know, from 7 till 3, say. And then in the afternoon, I would do jobs around the house, feed animals, potty calves, look after the kids, because the parents were probably two of the hardest working people I've worked for in a long time. And they, yeah, they just needed someone to stay at home with their kids and raise them. And I guess because it would have been all right if I didn't know what I was missing out on, but because I was missing out on it, I came a little bit resentful of what was going on. And
what do you mean, sorry, that what you were missing out on?
So they were out in the paddock, you know, mustering and processing cows while I was back at the house teaching the kids, which I'd put myself in that position. So I was 100% responsible for how I was feeling. And I will admit I didn't last long. It was tough, and I think it was a mix of I think reality was starting to hit me. I think everything was starting to sink in. Another relationship was breaking down around me, and my world just came crumbling down. So I decided that it was best that I moved on from there. Got back in my ute. I, some reason, ended up back in Bundaberg without a clutch. That's a story for another day. And then proceeded to drive. So then drove all the way from Bundaberg up, you know, back across the top and back down and home. So I would have been 19. I wasn't yet 20. So yeah, drove across Australia by myself.
Don't mind my, I'm trying to think. There's like a word for it. It's like,
insane.
No, like cereal box psychology or something, you know. Like I've read it from a book or off the back of a cereal box or something, but do you think, I don't know, I'm pretty sure that's not the phrase, but I'm going to make that now, cereal box psychology. Yep. do you think part of the struggling with that gubby role is that you, as you said, you were a lot, well, this is another issue for another day, but the role of a governess is very different from property to property, whether you're governess, nanny, whether you're a school tutor, you know, au pair, like,
and I think that was another issue, was I had other govies in my ear about how fantastic their job was. And I remember, and I do remember talking to my boss about this and being like, you know, I'm struggling. Like, and, you know, and she said, well, this is kind of what you signed up for. And she's 100% right. I did not go into that job blind. I knew what I was going in for. And I guess it's one of the things where I used to get really excited about these things and be like, yeah, I can do this. I can handle it. And little things that would be like little flashing red lights in the background, I'd be like, oh, no, it won't bother me. That won't worry me. And I remember her saying, so two things she said to me was, will the boyfriend be an issue? Like, because we weren't going to get to see each other very often. And will you be okay knowing that we're out in the paddock working and you're at home? And I went, oh, yeah, of course I will be.
Next minute you're sitting by the two-way radio with a pair of binoculars out in the field being like, what's happening? What are you guys doing?
Yeah. I was so young. I didn't know what I was in for in that, you know, like emotionally.
But in that cereal box psychology, I just had a thought, and again, this is me literally just off the cuff, like talking nothing of any credibility probably, but your role as a govvy was very full on, and you said, you know, you were at times raising those children. So you were a mother figure. Oh, and you were somebody who just lost a mother.
Mm.
Not again to keep bringing your mum up, but as I said, I guess she's going to keep coming up in this episode, but you're also, aside from, you know, it could have just been the role, but you were also having to be a mother figure.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I think I said in my previous episode, mum and I were very, very close when I lost her. Like, we were on the phone, you know, two or three times a day. We probably had some of our best conversations when I was 700 Ks away from her. So I think, yeah, and I'm not going to lie, my parents used a lot of tough love. You know, my parents were relatively strict on me because I was a bit of a rat bag of a kid. They had to be.
Still are, but yeah.
Some things never change. But so, yeah, so having that, you know, I guess I expected these kids to, you know, deal with me being, I was strict. I look back at myself and think I was so strict on those kids. Part of it was because I was terrified of them getting hurt in my care. And that is why we have public liability people. It's there for a reason.
Broken arm, call my insurance agent, sorry.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things that we live and we learn. And I think if I, you know, went back in now and did it again, I think I'd be a lot more relaxed because I'd be like, you want to climb that tank stand after I've told you not to? Go for your life. I'll record it while I'm sitting here telling you not to do it. You know, and so I think I put a lot of pressure on myself. And I did. I put a lot of my pressure on myself in the schoolroom with those kids. And I couldn't live up to my own expectations. And that, yeah, that was another reason why I just had to get out of there. Yeah, and come home.
Did you stay home for very long?
Yeah, I did. I must say, I think I was home by Easter, so April, May. So my sister was having her first baby. So that was pretty cool to come home and watch her go through her final stages of pregnancy. And then she was getting married at the end of the year. So it was nice to be home for all that. But working on the farm was not what I didn't like it. And I'm sorry, Dad, but I really didn't love working on the farm back then. It was boring. It was mundane. It was small. The romance wasn't there. You know, I couldn't go on a windmill run for 3 hours.
So when you say small, what is the size of your family farm?
We're about 4,500 acres. I get this wrong every time.
Even though one is 2.25. Size of the other.
Don't
get me started.
Either way, I've been there 20 years and still can't remember.
Whether it's 4,000 acres or 4,000 hectares, that's still a significant size for a farm.
Well, you're going from 4.8 million hectares.
I know the north kind of ruins it for you, hey.
Yeah, it's not great.
That's like one time I told my friend her station wasn't a real station because it was only 40,000 acres. I was like, oh, yeah, no, but, you know, real stations. And she's like, this is a real station. Yeah. And I was like, no, it's not. And then I was like, oh, bad.
Yeah, well, the properties around Julia Creek are quite small too, but because they've got, you know, they're on really good growing soil, they run just as many cattle. So hence why they're so viable because they're small acreage.
So the farm wasn't where you saw yourself then. Without going through, I suppose, everything you've done and since then, what are some of the things you found yourself doing over the next couple of years? Because I suppose it's not so much about what you did, like specifically, but I guess what we'll get to is the fact is that you kept moving and trying different things and you've kind of just been trying your hand at everything and
pretty much. Yeah. So, 2013 saw me au pairing. So I was like, righto, I governessing thing was too much pressure. I'll give au pairing a go and ended back up in the Pilbara with three most beautiful kids who I'm still really close with today and a family who I'm still really close with and did that for 8 months. Yeah, sort of left there. I think I did end up back on the farm again over summer Once again, another boyfriend found his way in there somehow, which, and that ended in February of 2014. And Dad turned around to me one day and he goes, righto, you're single, you're jobless, you're going to America. And I was like, oh, okay, righto. Won't say no to that. So, come April, I found myself on a plane to California. Stayed with friends in California, just lapping up experiences, really. I was really lucky. I got to go out to a cow horse ranch in, so I was around like, I was south of San Francisco. So I was beautiful mountainous country, you know, volcanic soils, a lot of grapes get grown there. So you can imagine the wine. And I think, I was 21 by this stage. Oh, you know, I was definitely 21. And I was just like this little wide-eyed, you know, Australian backpacker in America. So I was staying with like really good old family friends and they looked after me so well. And then from there I shipped myself up to Wyoming where I got to work on a fattening ranch just south of Jackson. So I spent a lot of time in Jackson Hole, which is just beautiful. I got to go through the Tetons and Yellowstone, saw grizzly bears and elk and bison and like all this really, really cool stuff. Got to live the ranching life and lived out in like a little log cabin. It snowed. It's ridiculous how cold it has to get before it snows. I'd never seen snow before, so that was like a massive thing for me and a huge highlight to the trip. From there, I went up to Calgary Stampede where...
What did you just call it?
Calgary Stampede.
Oh, it just sounded – I must have just not heard it right, and I thought you said it like slightly different. And I'm just thinking of yesterday we made a little Pip's Looking for a Husband video and she said she was a fourth generator farmer. And I was like, do you mean generation, fourth generation? And
then brain doesn't work 100%
Then we recorded the video a second time and she still said, I'm a fourth generator farmer. So I just thought you'd like butchered Calgary as well.
I was looking for a mechanically minded husband, all right? I'm trying to
hopefully one with some better English skills too. Anyway, sorry, back to Calgary Stampede. Okay,
yeah, so went to Calgary Stampede, got to catch up with a heap of Aussie mates. Probably actually met more Aussies in Calgary than I did Canadians. And then ended up back down in North Dakota with extended family. And once again, just got to live more of an agricultural, like, so a lot of farming. I ended up spending a lot of time with a beautiful couple who lived out on a ranch. They had no children and they would ride out every day, rain, hail or shine, and check their cows. And every cow had a name and they would have had like 150 cows. And every cow was named, all their calves had a number, like they would rope and brand their calves as they were born. It was incredible. So spending a lot of time with them, they taught me how to rope off a horse. They just took me in as that, like, yeah, I could have stayed there forever with them. But the time was I got itchy feet and I headed off, bought a car and I drove from North Dakota pretty much beelined it straight for the East Coast. So I think I hit the coast somewhere around Carolina, I think. My memory's not great. And then just hopped the whole way down, all the way down the South East Coast, all the way to Texas and ended up in Texas on, once again, friends of friends, working for two incredible Aussies, Selena and Eddie Flynn, who I've heard mentioned in a couple of podcasts around. And I was just so privileged to work for them. They were just, yeah, I literally rocked up on their doorstep and was like, can I have a job? And they took me in and I worked my ass off and I learned heaps and I learned so much respect for how they handle their horses. It was so different how I handled my horses. And, you know, they let me go to shows, you know, I still got a hat that they gave me because I had to have a cowboy hat to ride at these shows. And, I was so blessed traveling around America to be welcomed into people's homes. And, once again, if I did it again, I would do it so differently. And I do remember coming home being a bit like, oh, you know, I didn't get to do this and I didn't get to do that. Whereas now I look back on it and go, yeah, but I got to do this and I got to do that. And especially with the world the way it is now, I am so grateful I got to do that. So as soon as the borders open up, guys, hightail out of here. Like, go live it, because it was so worth it.
When you say you would do it differently, what do you mean?
Funny story. So I nearly got deported the day I flew in to San Francisco.
Second person on this podcast to say that.
Yes, I know who you're talking
hashtag
about.
Hashtag Lucy Daly.
Yeah. I feel you, sis. Because I didn't have a flight booked home, and because I was so blonde, I've gone in and I thought that I got a 12-month visa. They don't exist. So old mate at the checkout has gone, oh, so how long are you planning on staying? I'm like, oh, yeah, 12 months. And he's like, to the right, please. And I was sort of, yeah, put in an interview room. I wasn't allowed to take anything in with me, all my information about the people who I was staying with and all my contact numbers, everything were written in my diary. And I said, can I please bring my diary in so I can show you where I'm staying? Because I couldn't spell the name of the people who I was staying with. It was a really hard Jewish name. And like, no, you can't bring it in. And I was like, oh, Christ, okay. So I've sat there and I've tried, like, I have no memory retention. So I couldn't even remember the road these people lived on, let alone the name of the little Mexican town that they lived, you know. They were so close to putting me on a plane to come back home. I was in tears. I was crying to this poor security guard saying, please don't send me home. And obviously the tears worked because, he let me in and was like, well, whatever you do, don't – because I didn't have a working visa. He's like, whatever you do, don't work. Even if you're not getting paid, do not work. And I'm like, yes, sir. And so I didn't work. I experienced.
Really hope nobody in US Customs listens to this episode.
No, I'm not rushing back anytime soon.
So you have this whirlwind. You know, how long were you over there for?
6.5 months.
How did you – is that because you – is that why you went to Canada halfway through to, like, reset
your – No, that didn't make any difference. No, the reason I was over there for 6.5 months was because I was meant to fly back up to Canada before I left. So on, like, the six-month mark, I was meant to fly up to Canada.
But how do you even get 6 months?
I had a six-month visa.
Oh.
Mm, yeah, don't ask me how I got that.
That's all right. I currently have one for 5 years, so YOLO.
Yeah, no, so, what happened was I was meant to fly up to Canada and catch up with some girlfriends, and we were going to do a quick road trip around, you know, out to somewhere in the mountains, and then we were going to fly home from Canada because the, we're going to fly from Canada to Dallas because the Dallas to Sydney flight had just become a thing. And anyway, that all got cancelled. And I'm like, well, I can't, like, I'm not going up to Canada and spending 2 weeks in Canada by myself, says the girl who had just travelled USA so purely, like, all by herself. And I think I was so in love with my job in – sorry, it wasn't a job – with my experience in Texas, I didn't want to leave. And so I just sort of, yeah, stayed in Texas for – it was nearly 3 weeks, an extra 3 weeks.
So after that 6 months in America, what was next? without getting a blow by blow of every single thing you did, you know, what was the gist of chapter 55, yeah.
Yes, had to come home. Yes, yeah, so came home and I owed Dad a bit of money. So I was working on the farm for him for 12 months, just paying him back more than anything, which I said I wasn't going to go on about this, and apologies, but I think that was the year that I realized I had mental health issues. I wasn't happy at all. I mean, the farm didn't fill my romantic ideas of what life was all about. Yeah, I remember saying to myself, then that I really, really need to get help. I knew that I had mental health issues right back from before I went to America. but I'd always been able to manage them and stay on top of it. And now all of a sudden I was really getting like low lows and finding it really hard to pick myself up out of them. So instead of going and getting help, I ran away back to the bush.
Tale as old as time. Because as we all know, mental health doesn't – well, not that it doesn't exist in the bush, but you're not going to get many people asking you about it. You're not going to have much access to services. So if you want to avoid it, it's a great place to go.
It is a great place to go. And for me –
that was sarcastic, by the way. It's not great to avoid. No, sorry.
No, do not avoid your mental health. But for me, because the bush was where I wanted to be, it put a Band-Aid on it. And it made everything seem better. And for a while, I went contract mustering all around, mostly around Meekatharra Shire. Yeah, I think there was about 5 or 6 different properties that over about 3 years I would go do their mustering. Absolutely loved it. I lived the life of a gypsy. Yeah, one of those things, I always had the farm as a base, so I'd always end up coming back to the farm for summer, which was handy because that's when Dad was his busiest with cattle work. So I would literally be doing cattle work all year round. I don't think I had to suffer a Midwest winter for 4 years, which is fantastic. Yeah, and so then I was working at the feedlot here in Geraldton, because it was just down the road, and I got picked up by an export company and got offered a job on a live export boat. And that was a bit of a whirlwind because within, I think, a week, I was sailing to Indonesia.
So you've had all these, you kind of continued on this path of going off, having adventures, and then you kind of come home, not necessarily because you want to, or not because you're like, oh, I want to go and work on the farm, but it's like, oh, well, there's some downtime and the farm's just like a place to come back to more because, you know, or I need some money, I better come back and work on the farm. So it's more of a, it was kind of more out of necessity in a way than this is my dream. I want to come back and live at the farm, which is
definitely
sort of,
wasn't my dream.
Yeah.
Now here I am reverting back to mum. I think it is always in the back of my mind that if mum hadn't have passed away, I don't think I ever would have come back. I think I probably would have ended up, you know, going to New South Wales or Queensland and, you know, picking up a pretty good life over there. And I think I probably would have settled down a lot quicker. But because of the situation that my family was in, I always felt like I had to come home. And, you know,
we're so aware of that life is so short and they might not be here tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, Dad was on the farm, not by himself, but, you know, there wasn't, we are surrounded by a beautiful family, but there was no one stepping up to take over the farm. And there was part of me that was always like, well, come on, when are you going to step up? Like, you know, you've got to come home and work on the farm. And I kept forcing myself to want to come home to the farm. And I guess it took me until 2018. So skipping forward quite a few years, because it all gets kind of boring there for a while. Yeah, skipping forward a few years, I went to a station on a whim. So went on another live export boat the very end of it was after my first live export boat at the very end of 2017. Got a phone call from my mate as I'm in the hotel room in, I think I was in Lampung, waiting to come home again on Christmas Day. And he rang up to say Merry Christmas. And then he goes, oh, by the way, what are you doing next year? And I'm like, oh, don't know. Like, oh, I might do this, might do that. And he's like, oh, do you feel like coming over to Queensland and giving me a hand on the farm? I need a worker. And we had met at a preg testing and spaying clinic in Queensland. And he's like, I kind of want someone who, you know, can preg test and spay so that we can bounce off ideas off each other and ruddy, ruddy. I'm like, yep, no worries. So in February, I found myself on a plane to Charters Towers and spent a month with them. And the plan was to go spend a month with them. And if I decided that it's where I wanted to be, I would then come home, pack up my gear and move to Queensland. And it was that month that made me realize how lucky I was to have my own farm waiting for me, you know, back in Western Australia. And it made me realize that working for other people wasn't going to make me happy. I needed to come home and fill my own cup. So that was a really valuable lesson that, you know, unfortunately for them, they missed out on a worker. But for me, that was exactly what I needed at that point in life.
It was an experience that gave you some clarity.
A lot of clarity.
Which is kind of what you've spent the last 10 years looking for.
Yeah, looking for, yeah. And because I was working for my mate and his mum and dad. So watching, yeah, and his dad, you know, may his soul rest in peace, they got along very similar to how my dad and I get along. And so I was literally looking in the mirror when I was watching these two work together, and it made me incredibly homesick considering I'd spent so much time away from home. And all of a sudden I was like, no, I'm really homesick. I want to go home and take on this opportunity that has been given to me. So it didn't help that I had maybe left a boyfriend at home. So I came home and was like, righto, Dad, no, I'm coming home, I'm committing, I'm going to be a farmer. And so that was 2019. I did another live export boat that year. And I definitely got put in more of a managerial role. I mean, I was 27, 28 by this stage as well. So I had a lot more life experience. Dad could sort of point me in a direction and I could go do a job without him looming over my shoulder all the time. And I think in myself, because I was ready to come home, I wanted to be there. I wasn't always looking at the clock, wondering when I could piss off to the pub. So, yeah, my whole perspective on everything had changed for me just from that one little month.
And this is where you are today as well. I mean, there's a, you know, been a short stint away from home between then and now, but you're back here at the farm today, and this is what you do. So it's been a long, windy road.
The 10-year gap year.
Yeah, the 10-year gap year, as you call it, but so full of experiences. It's, you know, while you've said you weren't sure what you wanted to do or you didn't really know what you were looking for, you filled these 10 years with experiences. You've traveled the world. You've met people. You've, you know, formed relationships, friendships.
Fallen in love a lot.
Yeah.
And had my heart broken a lot. But I think once again, I think I learnt what most people probably experience in about 3 or 4 years. It took me 10 years, but I would not change it for the world.
I don't know if you can say, not like having a go at you, like, I don't know if anyone can say that everyone else learns 3 or 4 years. I think some people honestly take some 30 or 40 years to figure
different things out. But just the whole, like, I went, you know, 10 years without a career as such, or like,
but
but I actually didn't know what I wanted to do.
But that's such a social construction that you're supposed to go through school, pick a career, come out of school, study or train, get that career, keep it for life.
Meet the love of your life, get married, have kids.
Have a mortgage, blah, blah, blah. Have one holiday a year where the kids are screaming in the backseat of the car, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I have done just as many different things as you and not had a defined career as well. And I love it. I'm like, can I swear? It's my podcast. I'm going to swear if I want. And bugger it. I don't think, you know, you can't measure the value of a life or measure your success or achievements or anything by whether or not you've had this, and I'm using the air bunnies, a career, because you've spent 10 years, you've traveled the world, you have this wealth of experience, you've not just been sitting around watching Netflix, you know, doing nothing, never leaving wherever you are. You went to, you are, and it's quite actually impressive. So you did a preg testing and spaying schools, or just preg testing?
No, preg testing and spaying.
Spaying school in Queensland, and in WA, touchy subject, certainly gets my hackles up. But basically no lay preg testers, or not really, but you have managed to get signed off and
I'm accredited,
to do it in WA, which is basically there's not very many of you. It has to be done by a vet, even if it's on your own property with your own herd for internal management purposes. Anyway, don't get me started on that, because I'll rant till the cows come home.
Just on that, if anyone wants to talk to me about that, I'm an open book. I'm with Steph on this. I think that the laws behind it are bullshit. Pun intended, but yeah, it's, when it comes to management, herd management, land management, pasture management, whatever you want to call it, management in a whole, I am really, really passionate about it. And, I think because it's so bloody hard for people to get around these, laws and stuff, it's putting people back 10 years. And it was really difficult being in states like Queensland and that, where their laws were different and a little bit more flexible. I can't even remember what the laws were as such, but there's a reason why Queensland's pastoral sort of society is so far ahead of WA, because their management is so much easier. On so many different levels, and that's another
sassy episode.
But I'm an open book, so any questions, hit them, come my way.
So really, while you may feel like you have certainly haven't followed a traditional path, but I wouldn't say that the last 10 years have been any less successful or you've achieved any less or anything.
I guess that's more of a reflection of myself, or like my own reflection on it, in the way that I put a lot of pressure on myself.
Society puts the pressure on us as well. Like, we're given a pretty rigid template of how life is supposed to go.
And I also think being a woman in ag, it's funny. I've never really given much of a damn what other people think about me. And I've probably ruffled a fair few feathers for having that attitude. But so I don't know if it was really – like I never felt society's pressure on me to rush out and get a career, hence why it took me 10 years to be like, oh, okay, hang on, this is what I actually want to do. So I don't – I'm not going to blame anyone else but myself for the way that my life has gone. But I definitely will say that I myself put a lot of pressure on me to be something. I was constantly trying to be someone. And I definitely – so that on one side, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, but then I also lacked a lot of confidence to go out and be that someone. And I was constantly having this mental argument with myself over, well, you need to go do something. Oh, I can't do that. It was like having the two little, angels on my shoulder. It was, and once again, back to your mental health, that played a huge part in it. I said in my last episode, I was, in the end diagnosed with anxiety, which I didn't even know what anxiety was, really. I thought it was just everyone felt like this. So that made a huge, once I've sort of learned about that, that helped. But also all my friends were going to uni and getting married and having kids, and it was watching that and seeing their happiness and their comfort within themselves for me was really, really difficult, because all I wanted was that. I just wanted to settle down, preferably on a station with a really good looking husband. And raise, beautiful children who would grow up just how I grew up at Mount Clare. That was all I wanted. And I think I wanted it so desperately that I pushed it further and further away from myself. And, I sit here, I'm nearly 30 and I'm still single. But I'm also the happiest that I've ever been right here and now. So kind of wouldn't give it up for the world.
Well, that seems like a pretty good note to sort of start wrapping up on. that, you know, you've come full circle. Well, I don't know if that's the right expression, because I feel like full circle means you kind of end up where you started, which you certainly haven't. So not
I full have, circle? Done I, more I've, of a 180? I've come full circle, but I've got a really, really heavy bag of experiences that I'm dragging along behind me.
Hopefully it has wheels. Because ain't nobody got time to, like, put your posture out of alignment, lagging something around. So what, you know, for people listening, what would you say has been the takeaway lesson over this past decade? You know, as you said, like, you really are, and you kind of have seemed to have hit this sweet spot now as well, particularly, and it's taken you, you know, you've worked 10 years to get to where you are. You've worked, you've lived, you've worked in life, but you've also worked on yourself. What are the things you live by now, and what, I suppose, do you wish you'd known back then?
So I've got two sort of, or actually I've got three mantras. One of them I picked up, I was about mid-20s, and it was do the best you can until you know better, and then do better. And that for me was really, like, hit home, because I was like, just as long as you do the best you can do, and, you know, and you try and you learn and you do better and you're constantly improving, like, that's the best you can do. And people will recognize that and appreciate that. And especially the line of work that I was in at the time. So I was contract mustering. So I was working on different properties all the time. I was working in different environments and I was constantly improving, but I was still a little bit lost, to be completely honest. So I was still sort of that lost. And as soon as I found that mantra, I went, no, I'm doing the best damn job I can do. And if they don't like it, well, so that helped me a lot. Sort of become a better person. I still had a lot of improvement to do, but we got there in the end. Well, we are always improving. My second, is one that my dad recently told me, and it is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting something to change. And that goes back to mental health hugely. I mean, you can just, it's not something dad made it up, but it's something that he definitely lives by now, that if something's not working, you need to change something or you will go insane. And then the third one is monitor, manage, repeat. And so, yeah, it's once again, that touches on everything as far as, you know, land management. Yeah, everything. It's a very holistic sort of statement, I think. And, monitor, manage, repeat, everything.